Welcome to Body Sculpt of New York, 6 weeks to fitness podcast, where we hope to inform, motivate, encourage, and inspire you towards living a healthier lifestyle. And now, here's your host, the president of Body Sculpt of New York, Vince Ferguson.
Hi, I'm Vince Ferguson. Welcome to 6 Weeks of Fitness, episode number 67. Thank you so much for tuning in. In this episode, I will be joined by Saloni Cantaria, a former competitive tennis player and lawyer out of Nairobi, Kenya. During the interview, Saloni will take us on a journey from her childhood growing up in Nairobi, playing tennis, practicing law, and giving it all up to open Reform Cycling and Strength Studio, the first boutique cycling fitness studio in Nairobi. Saloni will discuss the reasons why she felt a need to open up Reform in her native land and the many challenges she faced to get the fitness studio off the ground. Saloni will also discuss her very unique business model and the various fitness programs her studio will offer the entire family. This is truly an amazing story of how one woman, through her courage, strength, and convictions, is seeking to improve the lives of so many people in her native land. Now remember the words of Bradley Whitford, who said, "Infuse your life with action. Don't wait for it to happen. Make it happen. Make your own future. Make your own hope. Make your own love, and whatever your beliefs, honor your creator, not by passively waiting for grace to come down from upon high, but by doing what you can to make grace happen yourself, right now, right down here on earth, and now that's worth thinking about." Welcome back to 6 Weeks of Fitness. Saloni Cantaria was born and raised in Nairobi, Kenya, where at the age of 6, her father taught her how to play tennis, and it wasn't long before Saloni excelled and competed in tennis, representing her country internationally in the UK and the US. Saloni then went on to play college tennis in the US and received her undergraduate degree from Cornell University, a law degree from Sydney, Australia, and a master's degree at the University of Chicago before moving on to Dubai to continue practicing law. After a successful law practice in Dubai, she returned to her homeland of Nairobi to open the first boutique cycling fitness studio called Reform Cycling and Strength Studio. Here to talk about her life and journey into fitness is Saloni Cantaria. Saloni, thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you for having me, Vince.
Now, I know you're 8 hours ahead, and we're recording this interview at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, which makes it around 7 o'clock p.m. your time.
That's right.
Right?
That's
right. So now, before we talk about your fitness studio, Saloni, let's talk about you.
Sure.
What was your childhood like growing up in Nairobi?
So I'm fourth generation Kenyan, and the history is that my great-grandfather, when the Brits colonized India, was brought down by the Brits essentially to open up a trading post near the railways, which the Brits were building between Kenya and Uganda. And so my great-grandfather started trading. And then after India was colonized, the Brits basically gave an option to those Indians that they'd brought down to Kenya as to whether or not they wanted to stay put in Kenya or to return to India. And my great-grandfather decided that he would like to stay put in Kenya. And so that's where our family roots started in Kenya. And now we've got a lot of my cousins who have had their children here and moved on to the fifth generation. But as far as growing up in Kenya is fantastic. I absolutely have no complaints about that. Grew up in a large family in a small city, which is rapidly grown now, and has about almost 4 million inhabitants in Nairobi.
Wow.
And went to a British school and then an American school here, And fortunately, I'm still friends with a lot of the people I went to school with, and we keep in touch. So I think that's something very unique about Kenya, is a lot of people who grew up with one another just continue to remain friends. It doesn't matter which corner of the world they've moved to or what they're doing, the connection's always there.
Wow, that's very nice. That was nice. Now, who were your role models as a child?
So because I love tennis and I grew up playing tennis, my role models were tennis players. But it changed from Steffi Graf, who I admired because she had a really great demeanor and a calm demeanor on the court and was a player of precision. And then obviously Steffi Graf, as she got older, decided that she was going to retire. And then my new role model at about the age of 12 became Martina Hingis, because although she was a player who didn't necessarily play with a huge amount of power, she was very strategic in the way that she thought through the game and often just beat a lot of her opponents just thinking very strategically. Fortunately, I've weeded out of tennis players being my role models.
Yes, I see. Wow. Now, what about your father? I know he's one that responsible for teaching you the game or coaching you in the game of tennis, right?
Yes, he was. So my dad introduced me to tennis and from the age of about 6 years old. And very patient with me on the court. He spent a lot of time with me after school and before school on the tennis court. When it came to playing matches, on the other hand, you'd very seldomly see my dad there because he just became a nervous wreck every time I was competing.
So, oh, my goodness.
And I prefer actually that he wasn't there, because if I looked in his direction, he'd often have his hands over his face and he's just nodding, going, oh, we worked on that. She's not doing that. So we just had a mutual understanding that he wouldn't attend my matches after a while. I think as a result of having spent so much time with my dad on the court, we've developed a really great bond. And, you know, obviously I'm much older now, and we still go out on the court and play tennis.
And oh, you do? Nice.
Our little arguments on the court where he's like, Saloni, that serve of yours, but it's okay. I still don't mind.
Now, is tennis very popular in Nairobi?
Tennis used to be very popular. So when I was growing up, there were a lot of really, really great tennis players to look up to. And the tennis association here was, well supported. We had a lot of tournaments that would be hosted in Kenya. And these are international tournaments. Davis Cup would be hosted in Kenya as well. Unfortunately, after a lot of us left, either to go play college tennis or some of the other players just retired and moved on to something else, it just seems to have fizzled out. And so when I look at, you know, the upcoming players now, they don't have the same number of tournaments, for example, to participate in, or the same club leagues that we used to have, which is a real shame. That's not to say that there aren't any tennis players at all. There are. But what's often happening is I think a lot of the parents are deciding if their kids are competing competitively to send them to places like Spain now or to Serbia. Obviously because of Nadal and Djokovic, their influence. So it's there, but it's just perhaps, not as, well supported as it used to be at my time.
Now, I know you went to school to become a lawyer.
Yes.
Now, what made you choose law over, let's say, tennis as a profession?
I always enjoyed the mental stimulation of academics when I was in school. I generally had good grades in school, and I think I'd accepted from a fairly early age that tennis was never going to become a profession for me, partly because I knew sort of what standard I was dealing with. And then if you really want to become a professional, I don't think you can be going to school, 8 hours a day and then trying to study 8 hours a day either, or going to school 8 hours a day. So I had decided that I was going to continue to compete for as long as I could and take that up to the college tennis level and then I will continue to play tennis, I guess, more socially and also coach tennis, which I did. But I wanted to become some sort of professional. And initially it was, I want to become a sports medicine doctor. I really thought that's what I was going to do from about 14 to about 20. And then that all changed when I went to undergrad, and I changed my mind there to go on to law school.
Yes. Now, I know being a lawyer is also very lucrative, I would say, correct?
You know what? If you look at the number of hours you work and the number of hours you actually end up being billed at
yes.
the law firm, you actually think it may be more profitable working in McDonald's flipping burgers. So,
yeah, there too. Okay.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, you really, really got to pull in the hours. So I have done sort of 9 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning, 9 a.m. to 5 a.m. in the morning. And it's just continuous for sort of 3-4 weeks. And then maybe you get a sort of a break and then it starts up again, you know, and you keep working till maybe 12 or 1.
Yes.
So, yes, you get paid a decent salary, but when you start breaking it down, you realize.
No, I get it, because I work with a lot of corporate attorneys as well. And I know they can start their day at 9, and sometimes they don't. I leave them there. They're there at 12 midnight.
Yeah.
You know? So I fully get it. Now, do you still practice law?
So I decided in March of this year that I had to basically make a decision, which was, do I concentrate full time on trying to build Reform Cycling and Strength Studio? Or do I want to continue practicing and just sort of keeping this idea at the back of my mind? Because I didn't feel like I could do both well and keep one foot in law and one foot trying to build up Reform. And so I made the decision that I basically had nothing to lose. Given that this idea had been in my head for so long to build Reform, that I should just step down from practicing law for a little while and then focus full time on building up Reform. So my intention is to eventually go back, but at the moment, my concentration is full-time on Reform at the moment.
Wow, that's great. But now you're following your passion, your dreams, correct?
That is right. I even though I continue to play tennis socially, I go to a lot of fitness studios because I just like to vary my workout. So I will go, for example, and do a indoor cycling class. Then I will go do like a bar class and I'll swim one day. Then I will go do Pilates another day. And I go to almost 3 or 4 studios when I was based in Dubai. And it just seemed to me that their model didn't quite make sense to me, because I had, I guess, memberships in 4 different places, but there was no one place which was just offering everything under one roof. And so I thought I could not be, you know, this one person having the same sort of frustration. There must be others who share the same sort of frustration. And so I came up with the idea of Reform offering a variety of classes where both kids, elderly, healthy young men and women could all attend classes under one roof.
That's awesome. Now, and let's talk about that, because now you could have opened up this practice, you know, Reform anywhere in the world, you know, but you decided to come back home to Nairobi, Kenya and open up Reform. Why did you choose to come back home and do it?
A few reasons. First, I felt like Nairobi at the end of the day is still my home. My family, my parents, my brother, my extended family is still here in Nairobi. Yes. The second thing is, I just find it ludicrous that we have some of the world's best athletes. Those are long distance runners in 10,000 steeplechase, now 800. And yet we just don't have a great training facility where people such as these athletes can actually train off the track. And similarly, that was the same frustration I faced when I played for Kenya, which is we do all the training on court, but there's no one facility where people can go to and train off court. So there seems to me like there was a need for it here in Nairobi. The second thing is, from a business opportunity point of view, things perhaps get introduced into the market in Nairobi maybe slower than a place like Dubai or New York or Sydney or London. And yes. So I felt like it was a first mover's advantage where if I get in there now, right, and I do it really well, it'll be harder for people to catch up because you've already set some sort of standard. Right. The third thing is, I guess there's some patriotism involved, which is, as I said, this is Nairobi's home for me. And it just felt, I guess, the right thing to do because this is where my roots are.
Three very good points, okay? Very good points.
Thank you.
Now, here in the States, obesity is a major concern, with two-thirds of all of the adult population overweight or obese, and the children aren't far behind. What are the statistics in Kenya when it comes to the health of the population?
So over the last probably, I'd say, 5 to 8 years, we have been seeing a rising middle class, and that means that segment of the population has more spending power now. And with that, what seems to have happened is a lot of the international food, fast food chains like, say, Subway or Domino's, Pizza Hut, KFC, seem to have identified that and are now moving into the market. So in a city where we never used to have those sorts of chains, they're suddenly popping up everywhere. Huh. And what's happening is it's becoming, unfortunately, quite a fast food culture. And as a result of that, you're seeing more people who are more prone to, say, heart disease, who are more prone to risk of being obese. And
yes.
Also because people just aren't walking around as much. Everyone's driving cars. So the trend you're seeing is in the urban areas, such as Nairobi or maybe other cities, perhaps such as Mombasa and so on.
I see.
People who are exposed to those sorts of issues. In the more rural areas and in the villages, those issues aren't coming up because people are walking a lot more. Their diet is still not, well, they've not been exposed to this fast food culture. So it just really depends on which side of the country you actually go to. And you'll see these sorts of issues come up.
Wow, very interesting. That seems to be prevalent wherever you go.
Yeah.
In modern society now, you know, and especially in the developed countries.
Actually, I also blame the sort of phone culture and the TV culture and so on, because it just seems to me, if you look at what kids are even doing in today's day and age, I grew up and I'd go out and, you know, play with my neighbors, we'd play hopscotch, we'd play marbles, we'd play badminton, we'd play everything outside. And today, yes. I look at, for example, my cousin's kids, and it's just a friend comes over, oh, let's go play the PlayStation. I found a new game on my iPad today. Let's go and play that. And there's actually not as much movement amongst the kids today. And that comes just down to, I guess, this tech generation that is now growing up.
That's amazing, because we find it the same way over here. Regardless of where you are, technology has been a blessing, but in some ways it's been a curse.
Yeah, right? Absolutely, because people just aren't moving as much anymore.
They're not moving as much. And if you don't move, you tend to put on weight. Right. It's not rocket science, right?
It's not.
That's amazing. So now, what challenges did you face opening up your first cycling and strength studio in Nairobi? Were there any?
Oh, God. I don't even know where to start, honestly.
Really?
Said to my family, my husband, I said, you know, if I was doing this in another developed country, I swear to God, it just would not be this hard doing it. But just yes. to give you, you know, some of the issues that have come up. So procuring material, for example, right, just in terms of the fit out of the studio.
Yes.
We don't, again, you know, no one specializes in, for example, flooring, fitness flooring, as much as they do in the States. In the States, you've just got so many companies which just focus on this because of the size of the fitness industry.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I tried initially to see what was available in the local market and then realized that actually, you know, everyone's very, very generalized here and they'll just say, this is a great fitness rubber floor, right? But then they can't right. really tell me why it's a great fitness rubber floor. And so, and they were just charging ridiculous amounts. And so I thought, okay, right, let's just go and see what's available in the US. And I had to get my flooring for the cycling studio and the strength studio from the States. I had to get my bikes, obviously, from the States because the indoor cycling bikes are not available locally. I got my lockers from the US because they were cheaper from there, even taking into account the shipping and the taxes I had to pay on that. So procurement was challenging because obviously I could purchase everything there, but then I had to get it across to Kenya and into Nairobi and into my studio. Then, you know, recruitment of staff. So unfortunately, you know, a lot of the local instructors here on the market have not been exposed to what's happening internationally, partly because we're not getting a lot of international instructors stepping into Kenya, teaching a lot of the local instructors. And then the local instructors perhaps can't afford to go overseas and get the right exposure to what's happening in the fitness industry. So recruiting the right team and then also training them up was a challenge. And I, funnily enough, had a challenge even convincing foreign instructors to come and just do a workshop with my instructors. So I wasn't asking them to even move permanently. I was just asking them to come down for, you know, 3 to 5 days and work with my team.
Yes.
That proved to be a challenge. I ultimately got it done, but it just didn't make sense to me. I'm like, I'm paying you. I am just asking you to come for a very short period of time. And I promise you're going to be safe here. Right? During
Yes.
So what's the problem? So that was one issue. And then the third issue was just, you know, nobody has built a proper fitness studio here. So I've been working really closely with my contractor on the ground just to make sure that, you know, the soundproofing is done correctly, the flooring is installed properly. The reform board, which perhaps I'll get to a little bit later, is working properly in sync with the bike. So the technology is working. And then the online booking system's working. So I feel at the moment I'm working literally around the clock and time's not my best friend, but hopefully that would all be resolved in a few weeks when we open up.
Quite a few challenges.
Yeah.
And so, okay, when do you officially open?
We plan to have an open day weekend on the 12th and 13th of December. So just over, a couple of weeks tomorrow. And the idea of the open day weekend is that people would get the opportunity to get a taster for what the classes are all about. I'll get an overview for how to go about, for example, creating your account on the Reform website.
Yes.
What the performance metrics you'll see on the Reform board mean while you're taking classes, how to interpret the data when it gets emailed to you after you've taken your class. So it's basically just to give people really overview of what the studio is about. And then once the open day weekend is done, we plan to basically open our doors to clients who'd like to take purchase classes from us.
Now, and I know you call your fitness studio Reform. Exactly why did you choose that name?
So Reform signifies change, and that could be a mental change or a physical change, but a positive change regardless. So that was the thinking behind Reform.
No, I like that. And now also I understand you Reform has, the logo has its own colors. Now, what does that represent?
So I didn't bring a franchise down to Kenya. I wanted to create my own fitness brand. And I thought to myself, this concept is completely new as it is for this part of the world. And how am I going to get people to identify with Reform straight away, right, without having to explain for 5 or 10 minutes what the studio is all about? And I thought to myself, the colors of the Kenyan flag could be reflected in the logo. And so I went ahead and put the black, red, and green and white background as the colors, because those are the colors of the Kenyan flag. And it seems to have worked because even on our Facebook page, we are getting, for example, a like even before, sort of every 40 minutes or so on our page.
Yes.
And I think it's primarily because people can identify with the colors straight away. So they don't really know what the studio is about or what we're offering or why it's different to, for example, a gym. But the colors seem to be something that people can easily relate to here in Kenya.
I think it's pure genius that you did that, you know?
Thank you.
I do. It sparks a sort of nationalism, you know?
Yeah, and people are nationalistic here. I think if you look at most people, they'll often be wearing like a wristband which says Kenya around it or something with the colors on it. So people are quite patriotic here.
Yeah. So in addition to the spin, what other type of fitness activities do you offer at Reform?
So as I've mentioned before, it purely down, I guess, to my own frustration of having to go to a number of different fitness studios to get a balanced workout with a combination of both strength training and cardio training and core training. I wanted to bring a number of classes under one roof so that people don't feel like they have to go to five different locations to get that balanced workout. So I had taken a lot of BOSU classes while I was living in Australia, and it's a very, very effective piece of equipment if you know how to use it, because it will, you can do cardio on it, you can do balance training on it, you can do core training on it, you can do strength training on it, and it's cost effective. And it's easy to sort of tuck away in one corner once you're finished with class. So it's sort of, it doesn't take up a whole lot of space in the studio. So we've introduced BOSU classes. Pilates is popular here on the ground, but mat Pilates. And so I'm introducing that. And I'm a big believer myself in Pilates.
Nice.
Then we're introducing, obviously, we've got a class called Reform Recovery. And what it seems to me, we pound all week at the gym or at a fitness studio, but we never really focus actually on flexibility training, which is just as important as strength training. So I've introduced a class just to focus on joint mobility and flexibility. Then the other class with, I guess these are more demographics that I'm focusing on, but class for active aging. So what I mean by that is a class for adults, elderly adults who could be anywhere over 55 or 60. And the class is specifically focused, for example, on mobilizing their joints, focusing on balance, and just getting a little bit of cardio and a little bit of strength work in there as well. Then there's a prenatal class and also a postnatal class. We also have classes for kids. And so I've separated the kids' classes into sort of three brackets. We've got a kids movement class, which is for kids between 3 and 8 years old, and those classes will be split in two, so 3 to 5 and 6 to 8. Then we've got kids fitness, and that's between 9 and 12. And then the last bracket within the kids classes is the teens classes, so 13 to 17 years of age. And then with our indoor cycling classes, we have separated those into three groups. So there's the Reform Beat Ride, and that is a ride which really plays to the beat of the music. We've got Reform Power Ride, where clients will be able to take some dumbbells, and at some point during the class, they'll slow down the pace at which they're riding and use the dumbbells to get an upper body strength workout. And then I've come up with something called a Friday pre-party ride. And the reason I did that is because I think Friday comes and people are like, ugh, I don't want to work out. I know I should work out. And the purpose of the class is just really to just let your hair down. Work's finished. Stress is over for the week. And you just want to get a workout, but in a fun environment, right? And so we will be having, like, for example, a Bollywood theme one week. We'll have, like, a Latino theme the next week. A Kenya theme the following week. So people just forget they're actually working out. And, you know, in 45 minutes, you've actually just done something quite fun, but you've obviously expended some calories during that 45 minutes.
Most definitely. This is very, very comprehensive. This is amazing what you're doing. I really applaud your efforts for this, you know?
This really is many years of frustration compounded into Reform. So.
Oh, man. Now, let me ask you, how big is your space?
We've got about 2,600 square foot. So the cycling room and the strength room are decent sizes. I do wish I had a little bit more space, quite honestly.
Yes.
But I'm at a point where, you know, we just have to do with what we've got at the moment. The advantage is that the studio is located in a commercial building. And so what I hope and I anticipate to some extent is that a lot of the people who are working in this corporate building will maybe come either before work, during their lunch break, or after work and take classes at Reform, because our classes are only 45 minutes. And I've intentionally kept it that duration because most people will only get an hour off during their lunch break. And
yes,
it'll take, you know, 5 minutes perhaps change into your workout clothes. You'll finish your 45 minutes and then maybe say another 10 minutes just to change back and then get back to the office. So we've deliberately kept our classes under an hour, one for that reason. And two, I also think I've been to classes which are 45 minutes and then classes which are 1 hour. I think a lot of people who are not necessarily into working out at about the 45 minute mark just start looking at their watch going, when is this pain going to be over? So
yeah,
I just decided we will keep the option open of having hour long classes maybe in the future. But for now, we'll stick to the 45 minute classes. And for kids who are between the ages of 3 and 12, those classes are just half an hour, because most kids around sort of the 3 year mark to about the 10 to 10 or 11, their attention span's not great. So
true. Yes.
We just want to keep those classes at the right length of time so that they enjoy it.
Hmm. So this is your fitness facility is for the entire family.
Yeah, precisely. You could be a nuclear family where it's the mom, dad, kids, grandparents all living together, and that's not uncommon yes. here in Kenya. But the point is, all of you have something to do at Reform. You've each got a class for you. And I, you know, particularly amongst the elderly adults, I think that's one demographic where I don't feel like people concentrate on them, right? The doctors have been telling, you know, for example, people in that demographic, you are diabetic, you need to control your blood sugar, you know, you're getting heavier, you may be prone to heart disease, et cetera, et cetera. But nobody bothers to actually work on them. And so that demographic is not necessarily going to come and work out with a 30-year-old. They want to work out with people in their own age group, right, who are probably facing similar issues as well, maybe arthritis, osteoarthritis, yes. and so on. So I just felt it was important to make sure that we address that particular demographic. And I know it will take time to pick up here, but I think with time, we should get people within that age group. You know, I think they all know they need to exercise, but they just don't have the right forum at the moment to do that.
To do it. Right. Okay. Now, how are you marketing your company?
So it's a new concept. And so what yes. I've actually realized is it requires me to do a lot of one-on-one talking with people. And I've been, you know, spending at least the last sort of 4 to 5 months just constantly talking to people and getting them warmed up to what we are trying to introduce. And so I've used Facebook because a lot of people here in Kenya are now signed up to Facebook and have
an okay.
I have also, as I said, I went to both a British school and an American school here. So I've spoken to, I went back actually to my school, my American school here, and spoke to them about it. And, you know, they've kindly agreed to actually just distribute information about the studio to other parents who have their kids going to the same school I went to, the media as well. So we have a number of newspapers here. So I've used that. And then corporates. So with the technology that we've got at the studio, which essentially allows you to view your performance data in live stream while you're working out, there's one function which allows you to do a team mode. And what that means is you can group people together and say there's like 20 of you. So you can have 4 groups of 5 people each. And then essentially each team, perhaps in the indoor cycling class, is racing against one another. And because I've been in the corporate world for some time, I, you know, as a lawyer, for example, I was a litigator. And there would be no reason, unless, you know, perhaps our case had something in common, for me to go down to the tax area and talk to the guys there. But right. We're all working for the same law firm. And it's important that we all know one another, because in the future, if that tax guy for any reason needs to come and speak to me, it's much easier if we have something in common and we've met before.
And, yes.
When I spoke to a lot of the banks here, when I spoke to some law firms here, they all agreed that actually we do team building, but we will do team building within our own sort of departments, right? Not across the firm or across the banks. But this was a nice way to actually just get those people in different departments together.
And yes, it is.
To actually just have something to talk about, right? Because you may just not have anything in common to begin with. But you finish your cycling class together and you're like, hey, how do you do? How are your scores? Right? We should come back together. And suddenly you've got something in common. So a lot of the corporates, you know, seem to have warmly embraced that idea. But in addition, you know, a lot of the corporates now, I guess, are following perhaps norms like US or British companies or Australian companies, whereby they've introduced a wellness program. And they would like to show their employees that they are concerned about their well-being, and they are encouraging them to get off their desk and actually go move. So
yes.
Law firm said to me, well, you know, if we buy, for example, 100 reform credits and we allocate 5 credits to each of our staff, can we do it that way? And I'm like, of course you can do it that way, right? But you've achieved 2 things at once. The bill's not very big for you, and yet you've shown your employee your concern, and you are encouraging them to go move and do something other than sit at their desk and stare at a computer all day.
Well, this is great, because I think wellness is something that's sweeping our country here in the States,
yeah.
And more companies are trying to get involved in their employee wellness, you know?
I think, you know, if I just look at sort of what my law firm was doing, for example, in Australia, they had at lunchtimes a Pilates instructor and a yoga instructor come, and they would just say to all of us, if you want to go attend a class, it's on us. Go ahead and go spend your lunchtime doing that. And actually, it improves your productivity. You don't feel like you're just sitting at a desk for 13 hours of the day, but actually only 8 of those hours have been, frankly, productive. And it just gives you a break, right? And you've done something good with your break, which is beneficial to both your mind and your body. So corporates are warming up to the idea in this part of the world. It's going to take time. But there's, you know, I can see a huge, huge space for that here. So in London, for example, one of the master cycling instructors who came down to work with my team said he did a corporate challenge between the banks. And the idea was that the proceeds of that challenge would go to supporting a charity. That the 4 banks had agreed on. So they are obviously achieving their corporate social responsibility obligations. And there's no reason why that shouldn't be happening here, or why it can't happen in this part of the world.
I agree 100%. I love it. I love the model. You know, and you're basically a trailblazer here. You know, you're going to open up other doors, I'm sure.
I hope so.
I believe so. Now, is there a membership fee attached to your membership?
Well, it's a good thing you asked that question, because we've decided to do something a little bit different. So there are a lot of gyms in Kenya, and they're all over the place, right? The problem is that they will ask you, for example, to spend the equivalent of $900 a year. Not everyone has that money.
Yes, wow.
And the problem is that, frankly, I don't know many people who end up going 365 days of the year to the gym. So
right.
We decided that was the wrong pricing model to actually go by. And what I've decided to do is to have what's called reform credits. So 1 reform credit is equal to 1 class. And the reform credits all have expiry dates. And I've done that because for 2 reasons. One is, it doesn't commercially make sense to have a reform credit that's valid for 1 month. And then the person just comes and uses it once, and then that's it. That person's not going to bring any revenue to the studio.
Right.
And the second thing is, if the person has the flexibility just to use that reform credit and has 4 weeks to use it, that's not really encouraging that person to actually go and exercise. So we've kept our expiry dates fairly short. So a reform credit expires in 2 weeks. So you've got to work out, once you purchase that credit, two weeks from the date of purchase, within 2 weeks from the date of purchase, sorry. And so we've got one credit, 5 credits, 10 credits, 20 and 30. And it gets cheaper as you buy more credits. But that just means that there are more people here who can actually afford to come to the studio and work out.
No, I like that model. I think that's good. That's reasonable, you know, very reasonable. Now, where did you get the financing for your club? Is this something that's coming out of your own pocket?
Unfortunately.
So
I'm not enjoying seeing my bank balance drain by the day literally at the moment. But I'd saved up enough after working as a lawyer for many years. And just was not in favor. I've never been in favor of taking loans from anybody. So I just made sure that I'd sort of saved up enough before I could go ahead and actually make the studio viable and implement it.
Oh, most definitely. Now, I know you mentioned earlier about your instructors. Are your instructors, did you say they're from other countries?
Initially my plan was that I wanted to have instructors from overseas and also local instructors. And initially, within the first, say about June, July, actually, I got a lot of expressions of interest from overseas instructors, one from the UK and then one from the US. The one from the UK was nearly all signed up. And then, unfortunately, we had a large-scale terrorist attack at a university here in Kenya. And although she didn't want to say that that's the reason she didn't want to come anymore, she gave a different reason. But it was quite clear to me, just given the timing, that that seemed to have obviously scared her, not realizing that where the attack happened was very, very far from Nairobi. And then yes. I had another instructor from overseas who I actually did sign up, so contract was signed, her work permit application was processed, it actually got approved, and then unfortunately her dad fell very, very sick. And so I said to her, "You, given the state that he's in, you can't be here in Kenya and obviously have your mind back in the States." So at probably around July, I just decided this plan's not working. I just need to focus locally on finding all of my instructors from Nairobi. And I decided that I would then go ahead and actually ask master instructors from overseas and who are trained in BOSU and indoor cycling to come down and work with them for a few days. And so that's what's happened now, is I've got all my instructors are from Kenya. And I had a master BOSU instructor from Paris who flew down for a few days in October to work with my team. And then I had a master indoor cycling instructor from London who works for a cycling studio called Cyclebeat to come down and work with my team here. And that was just a few weeks ago.
I see. Okay. So, but they're all trained under you the way you want them to be trained.
Yeah. And that's still going on. So I am somebody who, I guess, because of my background in tennis and also because I've been going to a lot of fitness studios, I'm very, very particular on form and technique. And so that's one thing that I have, been working with my team on, is just to make sure that technically, whilst you want to deliver a really good workout, you want to make sure it's a safe workout, that we're not having clients come through the door, have a workout and then walk out injured.
Oh, most definitely. Is your insurance expensive?
It is expensive, but I don't think we have as much of, I guess, a litigious culture as the US. So it's, yes, I've got to worry about it. And yes, I am taking out insurance, but I'm not perhaps as concerned, not the right word, but I'm perhaps not as freaked out as if I would have been in the States and I would have been doing this project there about the level of insurance cover that I'd be taking out for the studio.
Okay. Now, how many days a week will your facility be open?
7 days a week. And the plan is that we will have, from Monday to Thursday, we will have classes running from 6 a.m. to about 9 a.m. And then there's a segment of the population who are mothers who have just recently had children who are not working.
Yes.
They will come in at about 10 or 11. We also have retirees, of course, who will probably come around that time. And then the corporate crowd comes back from about 12 to 2. Then there's a lag time in the afternoon. And then we have kids classes starting at about 4:30 after they finish school. And then the corporate crowd finishes work probably about 5:30 or so on. And then the last class is at 7:30. And then it's the same on Friday, except we finish a little bit earlier at 6:30, partly because I don't think anybody wants to be working out on a Friday night at 7:30 p.m. And then Saturday, we've got a large segment of the population who works in the morning for half the day. And so I've decided to keep classes in the morning for those who aren't working on a Saturday, and for those who are working on a Saturday morning from 4 to 6 as well. And then Sunday, just from 9 to 1 p.m. And the reason I've got classes on the weekends is because there's a lot of traffic issues here in Nairobi as well. So for those people who live in a different suburb, which is not close to the studio, they'll get an opportunity on the weekends when there's less traffic to come over and work out at the studio.
Okay. So your studio is located in a commercial building, so it's in a commercial district.
The district is semi-commercial, semi-residential. So in the last sort of 10 years, a lot of corporates have started moving to this particular suburb, which is ordinarily residential. So the landscape's changed a little bit where the studio is located, and it's sort of 50-50 now between residential and commercial.
Okay, but that's good, because this way you can draw from both markets, the commercial market and the residential market,
that's,
you know?
That's right.
That's great. Depending on how things go, would you consider opening up additional centers in the future?
I want to just see, obviously, how reform goes and how it settles down. And then I think if it actually works out, I'm not sure I want to necessarily open up a second location in Kenya. I think I'd want to actually look at another market in East Africa. The market that everybody seems to be talking about right now is Rwanda, because they are very investor friendly and are making it quite easy for new businesses to open up. The other thing is they've got, particularly for cycling, they've got a huge cycling population there. So even if I were just to do, for example, a cycling studio and not necessarily a cycling and strength studio, I think Rwanda would be a good market to actually focus on.
Wow. Huh. That's good. I hope we can stay in touch. You let me know how you make out with that.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
This is great. Now, what about launching your own merchandise or clothing line for Reform? Is that something in the works?
At the moment, no. But one thing I have got my eye on maybe for next year or the year after is maybe to look at getting a distributorship for Under Armour. So
yes.
One thing I really like about their brand is, other than the quality of the clothing, I think their pricing structure is very good and it's affordable. And so again, you know, given where the studio is located, which is in Nairobi, and it's quite a price sensitive market, only a few people, for example, can afford to buy Adidas or Nike or Reebok, for example. Under Armour, I think, you know, offers similar quality, but at a much more affordable price. So that's what I've got my eyes on at the moment.
Okay. Now, how can my listeners learn more about Reform Cycling and Strength Studio?
We've got a website, and the website is reform.co.ke. So they can find out more about the website there. And on the website, there's also a Facebook link, which takes you straight to our Facebook page, or you can just search for Reform Nairobi in Facebook, and you can find out more about our studio there, and also, you know, just keep up to date with how the studio is progressing, what cl- clients enjoying what our instructors are up to and so on.
And what about Twitter? Are you on Twitter?
Twitter is popular here, but not as popular as Facebook. And so for the time being, we've decided just to stay with Facebook. I think, again, with time, if Twitter starts to become more popular in Kenya, then we will sign up to Twitter. But for now, we've decided not to go that way.
Okay, great, great. There's so many questions I can ask, but time will not allow, Saloni. But, you know, I would say that if there's anything I can do over here in New York to continue promoting, letting my listeners know about what you're doing over there, don't hesitate to let me know.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much for interviewing me. I think already by you giving us the opportunity to just speak about reform, that will at least get the word out about what's happening in part of the world.
Most definitely, because fitness is the key. You know, you have one body. You have to take care of it. Everybody, right?
Yeah, completely agree.
So, Saloni, on behalf of Body Sculpt of New York and 6 Weeks to Fitness, I want to thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to tell everyone and your listeners about reform.
And to my listeners, I truly hope this program was informative, encouraging, and inspiring, and that you will continue tuning in to our 6 Weeks to Fitness podcast. And if you have any questions or comments, please leave them on my 6 Weeks to Fitness blog at www.6weekstofitness.com or email me at vince@6weeks.com. Take care. Bye-bye.